Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome back to the Lieberland Show. I'm your host, Adam J. Carswalta, joined today by Andrew McDaniels. Andrew is a man of mystery. He invests in precious metals, resources, and beyond, and we're really looking forward to hearing his story here today on the show. Andrew, in the words of the great Jeff Berwick, my first question for you is, how did you become an anarchist?
Well, thanks for the great introduction, Adam. It was a long road, but I actually started out as a crazy socialist back in college. And once I took a few finance classes, I realized that I was lied to when I grew up. You see, where I grew up, I grew up in Scotland for 18 years, and I went through the British education system. And if anybody knows anything about Scotland, is that there's plenty. It's one of the biggest. It's one of the biggest countries that are pro-socialist. So I grew up with that, friends, family, influence. And so once I realized I was lied to, and
What was that moment? On the lied to moment, was there a moment where you're like,
well,
wow,
man, once I started going to college and I started learning from economists like Murray Rothbard and Milton Friedman. And so once I started taking some economics classes, I realized it really quick. I was like, oops, okay. Now, I didn't end up an anarchist right away. I always had libertarian tendencies, but I believed in politicians for a long time, especially when I was younger. And I voted a couple times. And once I fully realized that they're all full of BS, I didn't want to vote anymore, and that it was just a waste of time. And I, you know, it's like a funny road where as soon as you become a libertarian, within 6 months you become an anarchist. I would call myself more an ANCAP, an anarcho-capitalist / collapsitarian. So that's how I would define myself, really.
yeah, love it. I think for anyone who's really here in Lieberland tuned in right now, we all reached a similar tipping point where we realized in many ways we had been lied to. So it's interesting to hear your angle and how it came through kind of through the educational realm and the reference to Murray Rothbard and some other great minds there. It sounds like really just the Austrian school of economics is really
Austrian school, baby. Mises. Yeah. I love all those guys. Hayek, you know, so the more I learned, the more I realized, I refined what I believed in based off of personal experience plus just a thirst of knowledge by actually going and reading and understanding the kind of philosophies that there are. So I knew very quickly that Marxism and socialism and all this stuff was not my cup of tea.
Yeah. It might be considered unpopular, but I really... You had my attention the other day when we spoke, and you mentioned your thoughts on living in Russia and how you think it is a great place to be. And for many reasons, I would probably agree with you. I've never been there, and I know having a North American citizenship, it's not that easy to my knowledge to get into the country of Russia. But you live in Cyprus right now too, so we have to talk about that. But I guess tell us about just kind of maybe the positive narratives of the Russian side of the story that a lot of people aren't.
Sure. So I've been to Russia 3 times now. I actually got my visa to go to Russia a couple months before the war started. So I was in the country of Armenia getting my visa, and the war broke out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to travel and get my visa? And we were planning to visit family. So my wife's side's all Russian. So every time I go there, I've been 3 times over a span of 10 years. And so each time it was significantly better as far as the cars people were driving, the skyscrapers were getting built, There's a financial district in Moscow now, and it's kind of rival, like a rival to New York almost. Moscow is a beautiful city. The first time I went, my wife was pregnant. And one of the things I felt, I was extremely nervous going there because I didn't know anything about Russia. I thought the KGB would follow me or something like that. But actually, people would get up on the, we would take the metro and people would get up and let my wife sit down. She was pregnant. So I thought it was like extremely, people were extremely kind and they were full of manners. They respected you. And the people found out I was a foreigner, they would be offering me drinks and wanting to take my picture and talk with me. So I had nothing but warmth and kindness from every kind of experience. I didn't have any bad experiences. I felt safer in Moscow than I did in New York City. So that take that for whatever you want. But I've traveled through most of Russia, and it's such a beautiful place, and it's one of the most libertarian places. They let you, no one bothers you in your own land. You can grow what you want and basically do what you want. Like I said, I was there during the war. I was about 5 hours away from the Ukrainian border, and so I saw all the military buildup, especially going through the railroad system. And I just thought that even during the war, people were living like normal. They were trying to say in the news that the country would Russia wouldn't have any food or in the supermarkets. It was completely full. So whatever they told you is complete BS.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that with even some friends of mine who have family in China, and I think it is, from my observation, a little bit tougher there, because from what I have seen, at least in China, it's like if you do kind of go against the public narrative and you do speak out, you could really be risking a lot. But on right, that note, yeah. I'll never forget my buddy telling me, he's like, when you're in China, you see all these videos and stuff about how crazy America is, and you think America is like the craziest, worst, most dangerous place in the world if you just go based off the videos. And it's funny because I would say in North America it's the same thing. All we get fed is like these like terrible stories and images and videos of China and honestly Russia too, when in reality we're all, to your point, much more similar than we realize. And it's just
everybody, you know, is so friendly. And I've lived in 7 countries in the past 15 months. I traveled with my small children, and I have not felt unsafe in any place. That is really, really important. So I wouldn't put my family in any kind of harm's way. People thought I was crazy going to Russia during the war. But again, when I was there, it felt normal. There wasn't a war kind of like, it didn't feel like anything bad was happening. But like you said, as long as you're not an idiot and you don't go provoke the officials, then you're not going to get into any kind of trouble. And I try to stay under the radar wherever I go. I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb, and I want to be treated as a tourist. I don't want to be treated as anything else. So I kind of just arrive in the country and keep a low profile, because again, I don't want to draw attention to myself. And you just got to be smart when you travel, and you know, don't wear, like, for example, in London, if you wear a Rolex in London, you'll get robbed in broad daylight. So those are the kind of things, like, you don't do those type of things. You know, if you don't flash, then you're not a target. So
don't flash, you're not a target. That's true. Let's talk about where you are based right now. I find it very inspiring that you've been to that many countries in, I think you said 15 months. I've got a little one here, and I know we talked about this before, probably at some point more on the way. And actually just during breakfast this morning, talking to my wife about it, how just the idea of being able to live in different parts around the world, and especially in this day and age where we have the internet, we can work remotely from anywhere. It's awesome. And I would want anything, maybe a little bit selfishly, but also for her and for my kids, to just experience, truly experience other cultures in a non-touristy way. Yes. And you can totally do that now, and you're doing it now, and you're based out of Cyprus. So, and you're not even, that's like, I'm actually kind of incorrect when I say you're based out of Cyprus based on what you were telling me the other day. So just elaborate for our viewers and listeners, like where you're living now and everything else that comes with it.
Yeah. So I'm in the beautiful North Cyprus, which is a territory of Turkey. And it's a long story, but between Turkey and Greece, they've been fighting over Cyprus since the 70s. And so where I live technically doesn't exist. it is blockaded by the entire world, almost, except from Turkey. And so again, it's kind of like a libertarian paradise because the government is so tiny here that they're inconsequential. Turkey, they rely on Turkey for everything. So it's just kind of, again, I came here because I saw how beautiful this place was. And to go back to why I'm doing this, I decided a while ago that because of what I do, I want my children to be able to experience the world and to do a thing called world schooling. And I believe in radical unschooling, which is basically having schooling, like not a set curriculum, but based off of what the child is interested in. So I'm really focused on developing what my children like to do. So if, like, for example, my son loves sports, I'm going to focus more on sports. If my girl loves art, I'm going to help her with art, things like that. And so I'd rather let them experience the different cultures in the world and different languages and let them see firsthand rather than read them in books, which, if you think about it, the school system today is kind of almost like indoctrination, plus it's basically prison for children. And so I don't want my children to even be exposed to anybody with any kind of ideas that would be anti what I believe in, as far as I want to prepare them for what, for making money, for living a full life. To give them as much opportunity as possible, which I don't think the school system does at all. So even going to college, I think it's a waste of time. And my I love how Doug Casey says it's just a waste of time. Don't do it. So again, I don't even push anything on my children. I let them fully experience. But we have, you know, we're teaching them how to read, how to do math, you know, things like that. But we don't do it in such a set curriculum that destroys the soul of the child before they're even, I think they need to be children first. So yeah, that's why I want them to have fun and to, there's only a small period of time while they're a child, you know, and then once they grow up, then they can decide, okay, maybe if I want to be a doctor, then I can go to college or something. But oh, I don't believe in, you know, trying to push on your children exactly what they should be when they're not even, they don't have any consent, you know? So it's a big deal, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That really, I guess I would say thank you for your leadership in that realm, because I'm just going to, I know as I get to know you, I'm going to be picking your brain on thoughts and ideas on
of course,
parenting and teaching. Because I'm right there with you. I mean, I refer to government indoctrination camps, schools, as child prisons often as well. And I'm a product. I'm a product of them. And exactly. I'd say, looking back on my life, I can't be upset about it. I think a lot of value did come from it, but even more value could come from proactive parenting. Where you mentioned this to me when we spoke the other day. Anyone who's responsible for teaching your children can plant a seed at any point in time. You, as a parent, you might miss. And now some people might argue, you know, that's controlling or whatever. But to your point, I'd rather be the one who plants the most seeds.
Exactly. You have the vested interest in the success of your own child. No one else cares about your child and what happens and how they develop as much as you do. So why would you entrust that to somebody else? Now, of course, you can, you know, we're not the only people that, you know, we have, you know, we can hire tutors, we can have like online classes, like we do all those things for our kids. I'm not saying that we're exclusively removing education for my children. Like, for example, where I'm living in North Cyprus, it's illegal to homeschool. But, you know, it's just, if they ever come say anything, I'm packing my bags and I'm going. You know, I'm not going to have the government tell me what I can do with my own children. I'm sorry about that. I don't think a bureaucrat has the right to do that. So in that case, you know, what I do allows me the freedom. You know, I'm not under a corporation where I'm terrified to speak my mind. I have the flexibility to work anywhere in the world. And I'm not going to give my money to a place that actually, like, for example, I won't step foot in Australia. I won't step foot in any like COVID crazy country because they're still there. All those people are still at large. And, I'm just waiting for the next thing to happen. So I will never step foot in those places because, I do not want to end up in a camp. So, you know, it makes sense to design, like, especially when you're a young parent, you really just have to decide what you want and then design something with your wife, basically. And once you come up with that plan, it's just about like not being afraid to just buy a plane ticket and go. Like, I mean, we're planning to do this for several years just to, you know, do all of Europe, all of Asia, and, pick maybe two or three hubs and eventually make one of our hubs, like Liberland is definitely going to be one of our hubs. But, you know, we're going to have several hubs around the world in case we ever need, you know, one of the things I like about Robert Kiyosaki that he said was you need to be able to get out of your country within 3 days. And so, for example, I like to have plenty of passports, plenty of residency permits so that I can get out and go somewhere else in case shit hits the fan. And so I'm living this kind of lifestyle on purpose because a couple of years ago, I noticed that the shit was going to hit the fan eventually. And I wouldn't want to be in a city where the majority of the people, once they go hungry, they're going to go looking for stuff. And so I'd rather go somewhere where there's plenty of food and plenty to access of all things that people need and just avoid places where there's potential for problems.
Totally. What's the next step for you or for me or for someone in our circle to acquiring the private jet that's going to give us that next level of freedom?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, so what I'm doing to make money is basically I've got up to here invested in natural resources. I couldn't be any more in it if I could possibly try. And so I from anywhere from uranium to lithium to gold, silver, platinum, I'm fully, fully invested. How I'm doing it is through the stocks, producers, you know, guys, the mining companies that produce, and exploration companies. And so I was looking at a chart today where if you take the S&P and divide it by commodities, it's going to take right now it's at the lows. So it has about 9x room to grow if you look at the chart. So it's an unbelievable commodity super cycle that's going to come. And it's because there's a lack of investment in mining. There's a huge supply issue coming up. There's just not enough supply. For example, the copper, there's not been a major discovery in 2 years, and the grades that are being discovered are less and less and less and less. So as these old mines are depleted, it's going to be harder and harder to replace these supplies. And I think one of the major things that because of this net zero bullshit, where they have this artificial like timeline to get to zero emissions.
I saw. I have to say this real quick because I saw a funny meme the other day of a helicopter cleaning the ice off of
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, the
windmills.
Windmill. Thank you. It's like, yeah, burning all of that jet fuel for to keep the clean energy going.
I think I sent that to Matt. So when I sent that to my my business partner Matt, and I think
Foster Gamble posted it on his Instagram. I don't know if
you know Foster. It's going around, because here's why: like, those windmills, is the green energy is a scam. Windmills are never going to produce more energy than what it took to build them. So they're net energy negative. So you cannot, they take oil to every 500 hours to replace the oil. They don't work half the time. And then there was just an article today that in Scotland, they're running 6 hours a day on diesel fuel to run them on diesel. Can you believe it?
Well, even the machines that build the windmills run out of oil.
Exactly. But you know, the things about it is, in Scotland, where I lived for most of my life, they actually cut down forests to put up these windmills. Can you believe it? And this is like, they're worried about carbon. What's the most thing that can deal with carbon? Plants, trees, like, and they're cutting down forests. It's such a scam, honestly. And so the reason why I was bringing up like copper is because, well, actually, every windmill takes 60,000 pounds of copper. So we have to have, for all of human history, all the copper that's been mined has to be mined in the next 10, 20 years. It's just not possible. And so what's that going to do to the price of copper? So that's in every single metal. There's depletion levels in almost every single metal possible. It takes about 15 years to build a mine. It's outrageous that it takes that long.
Are you doing any advisory or portfolio management? Because we might have some potential clients for you now listening.
So I have a private group that I do that I help with number one with education, and number two if they want to know what I'm doing personally. I'm not a licensed advisor or anything like that, or a professional. But I do this for my parents, my friends, and I help them. And I've got a few of my social media buddies that I help, where I'd be glad to help people any way possible, because what I know is the shit is going to hit the fan, and I can't think of anything better that's going to do better or make up any kind of returns anywhere close to commodities, because the past 40 years, we've had basically a bond bull market, and that ended last year. So what worked in the past decade, the past 20 years, isn't going to work in the next 10 years, next 20 years. The era of easy money is over. And so you can't print gold, you can't print silver, you can't print the things that we need. And our infrastructure basically in North America is crumbling. If you compare that to like Singapore or Kuala Lumpur, any major city in Asia, it's night and day. They're completely brand new infrastructure, beautiful cities.
I did notice just now, you did say our, and then you referred to North America, which I think is important for maybe some of our viewers who are like, oh, it's just another person from Europe who's like ripping on the US or whatever. But you are...
I was born in South Carolina,
right?
And but I renounced my citizenship.
And you did, so yeah.
I sure did, because I don't want to be a slave anymore. And I realized real quick that just I couldn't stand the politics of the United States and Canada. Clear too, but I always refer to myself as, I don't like to label myself with as any kind of nationality, because basically we're all born into a body that has a soul, and we're really just, you know, it's just artificial borders and printed flags, right? Like, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. We're just people. Like, so I just think that Saudi Arabia is building so much in the next, few years. The Saudi Arabian Wealth Fund just announced they're going to be investing in mining, and there's not enough shares available out there. It's such a tiny sector. Once all the wealth funds go into this, there's not, everything's going to be bought up, and all the price, all the share prices are going to go, you know, way up, because there's just not enough. It's just such a tiny, it would take just a couple billion dollars to enter this segment of the market, and it would go nuts. And the nice thing about it is the London Metals Exchange and the COMEX are getting drained of physical metals. Everybody's taking the metals and it's going east. So they're going to be, as soon as their metals are removed, all this financial games are going to be over, as far as shorting gold, shorting silver, all this bullshit. The paper shorting has been, a lot of bankers from JP Morgan have got caught and got found guilty for spoofing metal prices. So all this kind of bullshit will end once they don't have the physical to do it. And I just think that the way that things are, the BRIC nations, or the smarter politicians, they're actually going to be, they will have all the physical resources, and we have, like, the West has nothing, really. If you think about it, the United States, all they do is export dollars. Mm-hmm. And they import goods from everywhere else. I mean, what else do we do? Like, it will take 10 years to build all the factories that Trump promised, right?
Right.
Where's the manufacturing, Trump?
Exactly. Yeah, we're in many ways, Liberlandians, I feel like we're just heating up. So, Andrew, we're gonna have to bring you back for a part two here in the near future. But for everyone who is a Liberland e-resident citizen, say hello to your newest e-resident and soon to be citizen. I know you've talked to Cam about that. Well, so
it's on my list. It's nice. On my list.
Andrew, what is the best way for our viewers and listeners to follow up and get in touch with you?
Social media. The best way on Instagram is @miningInvestingEducation, @miningInvestingEducation. And I'm on Facebook, even though I hate it to death, I still am on there, because that's where I get a lot of my business. A lot of my fellow libertarians that I work with are, there's no alternative really for me just now. You can just look me up there as well. I have a YouTube channel called The Free Capitalist, so you can look me up there also. But yeah, just feel free to reach out in any of those avenues, and I'll be in touch with you.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we'll drop that in the show notes. And yeah, that's, you know, I spoke to someone about that yesterday. Facebook, social media, whatever, living in this world, we can be the anarchist that just goes into the mountains and lives that solo life, and maybe everything is good, but what lives are we changing, right? So good for you for sticking with Facebook, even though they're crazy.
I've been banned so many times for posting memes. I love messing with those people. I poke them in the eye as often as I can, because I know that they're snowflakes.
Yeah. Andrew, thank you for investing your most valuable resource with us here today, your time. We look forward to the next time we have you on the show.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, Adam. Thank you so much.
Yep. Liberlandians, thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Liberland Show. We will catch you in the next episode.